Welcome to episode 8 of Reading Beyond the Lines. In this episode, I'll be talking about The Only Black Queer in the World and also the poem Queens, both from Ellen Van Nieuwen's poetry collection Throat. The Only Black Queer in the World is a part of the They Haunt walk-in section, and I feel like while a great deal of this section, Van Nieuwen has said, is about hauntings and sort of ancestors and place, I feel like this poem is an expression of the way their past self has a haunting effect on their present self. So the poem has a really clear shift, and prior to that shift, you get the sense that they are becoming something, or they haven't yet become the person that they want to be. And I think part of that discovery of self is indicated by the use of tenses. The pluperfect I hadn't repeated in the first part of the poem indicates something that has come before something that is different. And that something that is different is the speaker of the poem. So the turning point of the poem, I hadn't yet been to Mardi Gras, is where things really changed, or change in the poem. So we go from I hadn't seen electric fields, or sorry, I didn't know how to tell my family. So this idea of not being able to be your authentic self. And then from that, I hadn't seen Stephen Oliver, I hadn't seen Electric Fields, I hadn't yet read Lisa Belliere. We get an indication that they are developing a sense of self with I started a blog, I got many comments, etc. And then we revert back to I hadn't yet, I hadn't yet, I hadn't got. And then we shift to I wondered if my parents. So these references to the broader black and queer community, and I guess lots of popular culture references, lots of intertextuality, these are the things that at this point in their lives they're saying they hadn't yet been exposed to. And this really speaks to the importance of representation for people who feel marginalised, and that sense of representation mattering in that if people can see themselves represented in the broader community and certainly in popular culture, then that sense of self is going to be affirmed and reflected back at them and validated as a result. So this idea that they shift between the pluperfect tense and then the certainty around their parents, the certainty around their blogging community, and prior to that, the fact that they really did feel alone in that first line of the poem, speaks to that reflection on the fact that the gaps in their sense of self really haunted them. And I think that that's the inclusion of this poem in the They Haunt walk-in section, speaks to that idea of your sense of self being haunted by perhaps a period in your life where there were deficits or gaps in your sense of identity. Those deficits or gaps, you could argue, the speaker has tried to fill with their blog. The idea that they get many comments, this idea that they have a mode of communication where they can perhaps be themselves is significant. And then this shift with, I wondered if my parents would ever accept my future partners. So the notion that at this time, the before Mardi Gras, if you like, they couldn't imagine a life where this sense of self could be fully realised and lived out through partners, relationships and family. And that sort of the gap that they find within themselves is they articulate the fact that they're trying to fill that gap with their connection to the people that they could see, like Kathy Freeman and Prince. But the fact that Kathy Freeman needed to be conceptualized as a lesbian and that Prince needed to be conceptualized as an Aboriginal also speaks to this sense that they still, even in the people that they felt they could identify with, there was still a sense of difference or otherness. The title of the poem is inspired by the Prince song, The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. So even that idea, that positive affirmation that comes through Prince's song lyrics, obviously being a girl in the world is, you know, positions the subject of that song as existing within the binary, whereas Van Nieuwen's use of queer suggests something otherwise. So they've kind of subverted that idea. And we get the sense that the most beautiful girl in the world is going to have a different experience in life to the only black queer in the world. The most beautiful girl in the world suggests that they exist within a wider world of many girls, whereas the only black queer in the world really speaks to a sense of isolation and a loss of sense of self and disconnection. We then shift to I got trolled, deleted my social media accounts, and the only known evidence of black queer existence was destroyed. So this trolling that Van Nieuwen experienced, I think in 2017, when one of their poems appeared on an exam paper and they were subsequently trolled, that comes through quite strongly in a number of times in the collection. And Van Nieuwen has spoken about this, but the notion that they suddenly have to withdraw their online presence because of this, when it speaks to an aspect of themselves that they feel, where they feel like they can be themselves, is quite tragic, really. Okay, so let's see if we look at the shift, the real kind of shift in terms of positivity or a kind of a sense of becoming after I hadn't yet been to Mardi Gras. Van Nieuwen then, or the speaker of the poem then says, I saw the white gaze and the white gaze, which is quite a it's a unique way of separating out or combining rather the notion that I guess even the Mardi Gras community at their, you know, in their first experience of that community was perhaps dominated primarily by whiteness, but that very quickly shifts to the black queers everywhere that is capitalized. And we see that the speaker of the poem is enabled and given insight into a black queer past. So the sense of self that's led up to this point, the one that hadn't seen all of these popular culture icons, First Nations peoples who are poets, who are musicians, who are comedians, who are artists up until this point, the access to or knowledge of these people hadn't existed in their world. It feels like at this point that's all about to change, and there's a sense that the speaker of the poem is about to become who they are. That's also reflected, I think, in Van Nieuwen's choice to take up more space on the page. In the last two pages of the poem, we see that the poem takes on a more prose-like or a more, it's much more dense and looks like prose on the page. And that idea of taking up more space on the page, I think, could be seen as parallel to the fact that they are then taking up more space as a person as they grow to understand that they are not alone and that they occupy space alongside all of these incredible black activists, writers, artists that they go on to mention. this notion of consuming black queer art and creating it, and the idea that this enables them to become who they are, I think is central to the views and values of the speaker of this poem. I think one of the best ways to really get your head around the intertextual references in this poem is to go through and literally Google every single name that's mentioned, because there are some pretty iconic black queer identities and individuals across a myriad of creative arts spaces that occupy, I guess, positions in the speaker's sense of self, and this affirmation that comes with all of these First Nations artists, poets, writers, is it delivers the strength of the political underpinnings of the poem, especially in the second half, because so many of the people who are mentioned in that second half have a really key, they occupy key moments in contemporary or recent First Nations queer history. And, you know, with regard to Mardi Gras, with regard to artworks that are subversive, and with regard to writing that has dominated social media and beyond, the personal really does become political, and it's the political aspect of those black queer people that Van Nieuwen or the speaker encounters that enable a sense of self to become fully rounded. I think it's really important to note too the shift from I hadn't, I hadn't, I hadn't to I saw, I thought, I woke, I consumed, I saw, I told myself, I read. So it's all of this sort of past tense verbs that are really about enlightenment. They're about something positive. They're about something enriching. So we really see Van Nieuwen come into themselves and, I guess, in a sense, move from being haunted by deficit into a space where they can walk in a world where they feel connected to a very rich and powerful community. And I think that's really why I love this poem so much. I think, you know, there's some really key questions that need to be asked in reflecting on the views and values in this particular poem. And the first one, I guess, that I think comes to mind straight away as you read it is there's a lot of things you've got to find out in reading this poem. And I think one of the really rich and unique aspects of this collection are all of the references to other artists. And I'm sure I'm not alone in learning about other poets and particularly performers that I hadn't yet encountered. So considering the way that intertextuality is used as a stylistic choice to enrich the poem in a way that speaks directly to a broader community is central to unpacking the views and values in this poem. I think that, you know, on top of that, if we go to the epigraph and the intertextual inclusion of Patience Agbabi's excerpt from Serious Pepper, which reads, "No one's found until they find themselves hurting in the back of the throat." That, again, that intertextual nod towards Patience Agbabi, who was a self-declared poetical activist and spoken word poet, who was well known for diversifying a genre of poetry that was perhaps dominated by particular kinds of people. This speaks to Van Nieuwen's political purpose in this poem. Having that epigraph there, obviously the title of the collection is derived from that particular poem, but it also really points towards the overlap of the personal and the political, which is also at the heart of The Only Black Queer in the World. The other questions I think that need to be asked about this poem are the different language patterns. So really focusing on the tenses, and really focusing on the aspects of the poem that are negative that then emerge as a more positive and more affirming towards the end of the poem. Certainly, you know, Van Nieuwen experiments with a great deal of the traditional form of poetry. She uses, they use postmodern strategies for their poetry writing, and the central strategy of this poem is definitely those intertextual references that suggest the need for and reliance upon community and representation of First Nations peoples, but more significantly in terms of this particular poem, black queer people who have paved the way for poets like Ellen Van Nieuwen to kind of catch the eye of publishers. This poem is powerful, I think, too, if you look at it in comparison to or alongside the poem Queens, which has a dedication to Candy Royale, who is similarly political. And I think Candy Royale, who passed away around the time the poem was published, written, I'm not sure of the order there of events, but I suspect that this poem was written after Candy Royale died, but perhaps that would need to be double-checked. Candy Royale was another performer and poet who was a powerhouse. Her works were Killing Us Softly, which was a song that's fairly broadly available. There's also a fantastic performance poetry video that you can find of her performing a poem in 2012 at the Nimbin World Cup Performance Poetry Slam. I feel like this poem at its heart is an homage to Candy Royale, but also an homage to the maternal intergenerations, or the maternal generations and the forebears to Ellen Van Nieuwen, and the connections intergenerationally between women primarily, and also through nature. So there's a couple of really beautiful moments of imagery. The idea of burying mountains, but also of dying and being led back to rivers and flow into sea to breathe with our grandmothers and heartbeat. I feel like in this poem, it begins reflecting on a past self. So just like The Only Black Queer in the World, we have the speaker of the poem really reflecting on a time where they were literally outside themselves. So in that second stanza, there was a time where I was into perfection, I was outside myself, the spiritual work didn't get done. This idea of worrying about the external, and then the next two lines, the fear of fear, which I read as fear of the things that create fear, which is bigotry and discrimination. So I learned to fear fear and buried mountains. So there's that deep sort of sense of disconnection with self, of literally living outside myself. And that shifts in the fifth section of the poem, where the speaker speaks to rivers and flow, and reflects on breathing with mothers and grandmothers, as a part of, you know, that process of connection that will help the pain. So the notion, I think, here that death looks very different when the spiritual work has been done is central to understanding the poem. And I think that the shape of the poem is actually quite similar to The Only Queer in the World, where we move from a place of deficit and emptiness and marginalization and even a split self, the idea that we carry wars within us that need terms and conditions to be understood. That sense of split self becomes more grounded and whole through that connection to lineage and connection to maternal lineage in particular. And then, you know, this poem finishes with a question, just like Treaty finishes with a question, where we are being invited to consider how much we would do without fear. And I feel like that there's actually a really nice connection between the end of this poem and the end of Treaty as well, where the suggestion is that an open mind and an open heart and a way of moving through the world that celebrates acceptance and diversity is a world without fear. And that's reflected too in the question at the end of Treaty. I feel like these works speak to each other in that sense. But certainly the shape of this this particular poem, Queens, is similar to The Only Black Queer in the World, just like the dedication works on a similar level, that sort of suggestion of an homage to someone so deeply political and resistant and subversive, you know, in a similar sense to Patience Agababi. We have this notion of the importance of acknowledging those who come before us, that who enable us to be who we need to be. And I feel like there's a really nice connection between both The Only Black Queer in the World and Queens for that reason. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we will see you soon.